Welcome to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast, the podcast that pulls back the curtain on the evolving world of sports science. I'm Andrew Rizza, an athlete trainer with decades of experience in professional, collegiate, and high school sports.
And I'm Cameron Roth, an orthopedic surgeon and a consultant for the Chicago White Sox.
In each episode, we'll explore the real-world challenges and opportunities facing today's human performance professionals.
Our hands-on experience is transforming sports medicine and breaking barriers through innovation and teamwork.
We're here at the 2025 NATA convention with Rob Potash, Vice President of Sales and Marketing for CSMI Solutions, or Computer Sports Medicine. Rob, welcome to the show.
Andrew, thank you very much. Cameron, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Excited to be with you. I'm excited to hear about Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast.
Yeah, and we're excited to hear about Computer Sports Medicine.
Happy to share it. You know, it's kind of funny. So I hardly talk about the customers because I don't know what's allowed and not allowed. So, for example, Red Bull bought one of our systems up in Santa Monica. Really, a four-page contract saying you will not say the word Red Bull for the rest of your life.
Right.
Basically,
it's I won't ask.
Now, the ski team, I'll say, yeah, we just put one in Park City.
I say, fine. Can I say what they're using? Can I ask what are they using it for?
They'll use it for testing and they'll use it for exercise. So, you know, the ice connects, it's just an ideal way to measure. Are you familiar with it at all or not really?
I mean, in general, biomechanical.
Basically, the advantage of it is it holds the speed constant, so it creates a force curve.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's one joint at a time. So I know I'm testing the knee. That's a good curve. This is a bad curve.
Yeah.
So, and what they do is they put, that's torque and that's position. So I know if this is zero and that's 90, then I know that at this point in the range of motion, you have a deficit.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of training you for through this whole motion, I only need to train you here because here's where your weakness is. And I don't need to do the hamstrings because this is just your quads.
Yeah.
So in essence, the short of it is it lets you see what you're treating.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, I know you have a weak knee, so we're going to do leg extensions and leg curls. But if you don't have any deficit in your hamstrings, why are you doing leg curls? It's a waste of time. So what it lets you do is it lets the physical therapist be a little more focused, or the athletic trainer be more focused. And if you think about strength training, it's all about time under tension, right, for building muscle strength. So when you lift a weight, you can only lift a weight to the weakest point in the range, right? The sticking point. So if I can do 100 pounds here, but only 50 here, I can only use a 50-pound dumbbell.
Right.
Isokinetically, because it holds the speed constant, the load is always changing. So you're pulling, you're maximizing the muscle contraction all the way through the range. So it's a much more efficient way to get stronger.
Yeah.
So like in CrossFit, so I finished, like 1 year I finished 37 in CrossFit for my age group, because I have a UBE at my house that's isokinetic. So, you know, when it was like, hey, do pull-ups, do dips, whatever.
You're doing
climb ropes. It ain't a big deal for me because I'm on a UBE for 12 minutes a day. You know, imagine if you were lifting a weight for a solid 12 minutes, not 12 minutes with you really lifting it for like 2 minutes,
right?
But 12 minutes of lifting. So in essence, you're lifting on an ergometer.
Yeah.
So we're coming out with an isokinetic bike because the problem with isotonic bikes is you have a strong leg and a weak leg. So you have to set the load to the weak leg. So, well, let me go to Cybex's history. Cybex built an incredible company. And if you look at what they did in the 70s, it all applies today. It was just forgotten. So my goal in life, other than personal family, check that box, for professional work life, is to really rebuild what Cybex did because they did a really good job. It was all based in science and it works.
Yeah.
I know it works. And that's, you know, it worked for 40 years. You know, there were just some price problems along the way, but it worked.
Today's episode is sponsored by Get Raw, a potent antioxidant blend made with all raw organic ingredients. The Get Raw ginger turmeric formulation is 200 to 300 times more bioavailable to the human body. Documented benefits include decreased inflammation, improved digestion, immunity, cognition, and more. Get healthy, get well, get raw, the organic wellness shot.
Yeah. Do you think the technology or the thought process behind Cybex is still incredibly relevant, but they had some business issues?
Yeah. So let me take you through the history of isokinetics, if that works for you guys.
Yep. Perfect.
Okay. So we're going to dial the clock back all the way to 1960. There's a gentleman named James Perrin, and he's working for a company, and he wants to measure maximum muscle capacity. So at the time, you had two choices to measure muscle capacity. One was isometric, right, where you put your arm, say, at 90 degrees, you lock it and you contract. So you'll build muscle strength or you'll measure the muscle strength at the 90 degrees with a little bit of overflow, right, up on each side. So that's one way to measure muscle strength. The other choice at the time was an isotonic. So I have a fixed load. I can go as fast as I want. But when you use an isotonic, you can only lift the weakest point in the range of motion, right? There's always that sticking point, right? So if I can pick up 50 pounds with my arm, but later in the range, I can do 100 pounds. I can only use a 50-pound dumbbell because I can't get past the sticking point. But he wants to measure maximum muscle capacity all the way through the range. So what he came up with was the idea of, if I control the speed, then you can pull as hard as you want. And if you can't accelerate, the muscle is now at maximum effort, right? So that's what he called cyberkinetic.
Yeah.
Okay. So the idea is, I set a speed and they call it degrees per second. So maybe 60 degrees per second. I pull, once I hit that speed, I can't pull any faster. Now I'm really trying. It's getting, the harder I pull, the heavier it is. Maximum muscle effort. So he takes that and he says, okay, I'll plot that torque. So now I can see a strength curve. So I can actually see the performance of the muscle all the way through the range, right? And then he puts the strength and then he puts it on the x-axis position. So now I know in the range of motion where the muscle is and how strong it is at each point in the range of motion. So if I go, say, a knee extension from full extension, 115 degrees to zero, I kick out my one side, my uninvolved side, it goes up, it comes down, it's nice and smooth. My involved side, it goes up, it follows the first, you know, first 30% of the curve, but then all of a sudden it drops off. I know, well, that's where the deficit is, right? It's that latter two-thirds of the curve. That's where I need to train. So unfortunately for James, his company wanted nothing to do with the product. So that company was in New York, and there's another company in Long Island called Lumex. So if you go into CVS, you'll see Lumex walkers, Lumex, that was Lumex. So Lumex buys the rights to the cyberkinetic dynamometer, and they create a division called Cybex. So the name Cybex comes from the word cyberkinetic. So Cybex takes the product, and they say, okay, here's a good product for measuring maximum muscle capacity. Who needs to know that? Well, first off, researchers at universities want to know, you know, how strong is a muscle? If I change a protocol, am I getting an effect, right? So they go to the universities and they say, hey, you need this to measure maximum muscle capacity. But also, they need the university, so they need to validate it as a testing device. So the universities start doing studies and go, yeah, this works. It's actually a valid way to measure muscle capacity. And what they did is they coupled it so that you could only do a joint at the at a time. So you knew you were testing the knee, or you knew you were testing the ankle, or you knew you were testing the hip, right? So they called it isolated joint testing. So then they went to the physicians and they said, orthopedics, and said, would you like to know if your surgeries are successful? Yeah. Would you like to know how strong your patients are? And they said, yes, great. Then they went to the physical therapists and they said, would you like to get referrals from physicians? And they said, yes. So they said, okay, well, if you buy one of these isokinetic machines, at the time it was called the Cybex machine, the physicians will write referrals for physical therapy so you can test them. Right. And then you can also train, because it turns out it's also a very good way to strengthen a muscle because you're strengthening all the way through the range. So that's how it started. The universities bought it for research, validated it as an active or a valid testing device. The physical therapist bought it because they wanted referrals, and the doctors wrote referrals because they needed to know, are my patients progressing? Then it spilled over into the sports medicine, the athletic training field, because, you know, what works in physical therapy works in athletic training. I mean, in essence, an athlete's an athlete, right? You can be a 90-year-old athlete. You can be a 10-year-old athlete. An athlete's an athlete. A person's a person. So it started selling into the universities with the athletic trainers because they have athletes that got injured. They needed to see the extent of the injury. Hence, you'd buy a Cybex machine. Okay?
So why did it go away from... So we had one in our PT clinic 25, 30 years ago.
Yep.
And it disappeared. Ended up being a towel rack. You stopped using it for one reason, but why did it all of a sudden disappear out of sports medicine facilities and physical therapy? Was it cost relation?
Yeah, exactly. So, and I'm going to hold that thought for 2 minutes.
Okay.
So Cybex's machine was passive, kick pull, right? So just to give you the complete history, around 1981, a company called Kingcom Chattanooga bought what was an active dynamometer. So they had actually a hydraulic system so they could power it. So a concentric contraction, you can generate so much force. An eccentric contraction, you can generate more force. The more you break down the muscle, the more it grows, right? So Kingcom or Chattanooga introduced this idea of active isokinetics. So now we added CPM. So I want to increase range of motion, right? They added isometric if they're not ready for isokinetic. They added isotonic. So if you want to do control, isotonic is good for control, but you still have the isokinetic. So that's where the active side of isokinetics came in. And then another company, Biodix, came along and they bought the rights to an active dynamometer too. So the market's killing it, right? Because every time somebody sat on an isokinetic machine, your clinic would earn $100. And back then it was what was called modality-based billing. Modality-based billing is, I have a Cybex test. there was actually a billing code called Cybex. You get $100, have some ice, that's 25, have a little electrotherapy, that's 50. So you could charge a lot,
right?
Physical therapy. In 1992, when healthcare reform came along, it all changed.
Yeah.
You know, the modality-based billing and physical therapy went away, replaced with time-based.
Right.
So now if it's time-based revenue versus modality-based revenue, your financial model has completely changed.
Right.
So if you walked into your clinic, and was it Brookline Sports Medicine?
Sports and Physical Therapy.
Okay. You know, that clinic was probably 4,000 square feet, had a whole run of selectorized weight equipment, physical therapy space, a Cybex machine or an isotonic machine. It was loaded with equipment. After that, 2,000 square foot clinics. So the market went away. So what happened? So what happened was, you know, Cybex's financial model didn't work anymore because you couldn't do the how many patients do you have times the revenue. It was just how much time. So you couldn't afford to use, you couldn't afford to buy the machine. Now, why people that owned them that didn't use them? So then this thing called closed chain, right? All of a sudden, closed chain was the hot thing, right? Open chain, open kinetic chain was dangerous. That's going to blow up all the knees. Closed kinetic chain was the way to go. So it was sort of the, you know, the perfect storm of, hey, my revenue is down because I'm not getting billed per use. And now everybody's saying I should do closed chain exercise and not open chain exercise. So that's why it went away. So Cybex went away. They merged with a company who said, we don't do, it was a fitness company, and they said, we don't do medical. So they sold the Cybex Isokinetic products to a company in Texas who sold it to a company in Washington who got shut down by the SEC for stock fraud. And that's how we got it. And then Chattanooga said, we don't want to do Isokinetics anymore, KingCom. So they sold it to Biodex and Biodex shut it down. There was a company called Lordan. They went out of business only because the money was gone.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the history of Isokinetics. And then where CSMI jumps in is in 1980. My brother was a student at MIT and Cybex was looking for a computer. So there's no cell phones. There's no personal computers. Like, you know, they're mainframe computers and mini computers. So they had a Cybex machine that printed out the report on a strip chart. So you had a torque curve and a position curve, and you'd take a little white card and you'd measure the values. So it'd take about 20 minutes to do the test. It would take 40 minutes to create the report. So Cybex goes to MIT and says, hey, we need someone to create a program to run on a computer. So Apple had just come out with the 2E, I think around 1980 or 81. So it was, timing was right. So MIT says, well, that's cool. We have a student that wants the project. We'll do it, but we need the medical expertise. So they go to Mass General. And by the way, at MIT was Paul Grace. Okay. He was the athletic trainer there, right? Yeah. And Paul's like,
oh, going way back.
Yeah. Paul's like, this is cool. I'll do that, right? And you had Coco Kasabian, Northeastern, right?
Yeah.
I'll play. So they go to Mass General, and then there's two physical therapists, Mary Watkins and Betty Ann Harris. And the doctor, the orthopedic surgeon, you may know his name because Dr. Gill studied under him.
For Zarin.
For Zarin, exactly. So Rich works with Zarin's for a year. They create this program that sits on a computer that's the size of a large filing cabinet. It's huge. Cybex looks at it and says, well, that's kind of neat, but we're not interested. We'll do something else. So Zarin says, yeah, I think that's pretty cool. Why don't you keep doing what you're doing? So Mass General hires Rich for a year, and he takes it off this big box and shrinks it down to an Apple IIe. So my dad, who'd always been an entrepreneur, says, why don't you start a company to sell your software upgrade for the Cybex? So what happened was, Rich, is you do the test in 20 minutes, and now you get your results in 2 minutes as opposed to 40 minutes. So now we're selling a time saver. Right.
So that's where computer sports medicine.
That's where computer sports medicine was born.
Yeah.
Neat side story about pricing. And I think you got a little bit of that when you signed in for the show.
Yeah.
It's expensive to have a company. So Rich starts the company. So he takes his high school friend. He takes the Ford Granada. He drives out to St. Louis for the combined sections meeting at the APTA. Sets up the booth. So our product is a 5 1/4 inch floppy disk and an ADD converter. And the price is $7,000.
Wow. Back then.
Back then. So Rich comes back. Goes to my dad and says, who is a serial entrepreneur, I'm going to be out of business because, you know, people are selling this thing for $500. And my dad goes, how many Cybex machines do you think are out there? We're guessing 1,000, right? And he goes, okay, how many think you can sell in a year? 100. Okay. So 100 times 500 isn't very much money.
Yeah.
Those guys will not be in business a year from now. And sure enough, a year from now, we're the only company selling
wow.
an upgrade.
Right. Yeah, dad's wisdom.
Dad's wisdom, you know? Pays to listen to the people with experience.
Right.
So that's how we got started. So for 20 years, we sold upgrades. Isokinetic products was shut down for stock fraud. We bought it through an auction, the rights to the product. And that was 2003. So that's when we transitioned from a company that sold software upgrades to Cybex machines to a company that actually manufactured isokinetic machines. So that's where we went into the isokinetic business. So the way I met Andrew was, so we would be at the NATA show, right, with an Apple IIe and an IBM PC on the table. And people would go by and say, is that an injury tracking program? Because there's a gentleman named Chad Starkey, right, who was probably...
my program director at Northeastern University.
Yeah, right. Yeah. The godfather of injury tracking programs. Because I think his program, ALFIE, was the first.
Right, it was.
Yeah. And I'm sure that acronym ALFIE means something really clever that only Chad knows.
Yeah, I should have asked him that when I interviewed him.
Yeah, right. That would, that'd be the extra points on the test, right? Yeah, surprised he didn't put it on the other training.
Right.
Anyway, so people would walk by the booth and go, is that an injury tracking program like ALFIE? And we'd go, no, it's a program for the Cybex machine. It does isokinetic testing and training. But, you know, enough people ask you that question, you go, why don't we write an injury tracking program?
Right.
So what did we do? We called up Paul Grace.
Yeah.
And we said, hey, we want to do an injury tracking program.
Yeah.
He goes, oh, that's cool. I'd like one of those because right now I'm using paper. So, you know, Rich, Paul, and I sat down and we basically said, okay, give us all your paperwork, right? And they gave us, you know, well, here's the card that they fill out when they get an injury. Here's where we write down the treatments. And we just basically turned that into a, you know, a program for the IBM PC, XP at the time. So there was hard drives, a 10 megabyte hard drive. And then when we launched it, our very first customer was AJ Duffy. So AJ's at Widener, right? He's friends with Paul. He hears about it. So he's like, oh, I want to see it. We're like, okay, you know, it's $500. That's great. I'll come up and look at it.
Yeah.
And Rich and I are looking at each other like, you come from Widener on a train to Waltham, Massachusetts for a $500 program. That's probably less than the train ticket to do it. But AJ comes up. He looks at it, gives us a wealth of information. And AJ, he's just a great guy. And he buys it. But AJ is, you know, sportswear, because it's desktop, customer number one.
Yeah.
And he buys sportswear. And then here we're in Massachusetts. So who goes next? So you got Rick Burr at Brandeis, bingo. Coco, Northeastern, bingo. Chris Charles, Babson, right? Yeah. And it just flared out from there.
And that's how I got introduced. One, I end up seeing you guys, but also I worked with Jamie Musler as a clinical student at Curry College.
Yep.
And he's like, you got to put all this stuff on the computer. And I'm like, looking, I'm like, okay. And this is, it was on an Apple.
Yeah.
One of the original Apples, green text type. And then that's how I learned about it. And that's the first EMR that I ended up purchasing as an athletic trainer over 30 years ago. And I still use it now since you guys have been transforming it to online, now handhelds. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, the progression, you know, on the one side of it, you look at the time frame. So, you know, Sportswear came out in 1991. You're like, oh, that's a really long time ago. But, you know, there's blocks. It came out on desktop computers.
Actually, I might have started using 93 with Chris at Babson.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, right in the early stages.
Yeah, so it went from there. And, and think about how you guys work, right? So what did we do first? Well, first, we just wanted to find a convenient way to catalog the injuries, right, and catalog the treatments. But you guys were still mailing paper out for the athletes for the pre-participation, right? Then they would mail it back to you and you would type it in. Then you guys decide, well, now we can put our forms online. Right. So Sportswear lets you put your forms online so they could download their forms. Then fillable PDFs came around. So now they're filling out their forms online to the point now where they can do it on their phone. They can fill out their forms on the phone. They send it in electronically. You get a little ping on your phone. It's like, hey, Rob just signed up for sports. Oh, yeah. That's right. Check.
Check it off.
Yep.
Are you able to track some of the patient reported outcome data and all the stuff that comes into your electronic
medical
record?
So CSMI is not able to do that. We don't look at anybody's record. You know, that's the biggest challenge actually for us as a company on the sportswear side, which is all the security, right? Because rightly so, all the schools are concerned about security.
But in general with the...
Andrew can.
Yeah.
So he can go back. So there's a whole reporting side. So when people ask me, you know, what does sportswear do? It allows you to collect, manage, and report. Collect means whether it's the athletic trainer putting it in, whether it's the coach putting the game schedule in, or the athlete putting their information in. That's the collect side. The manage is, you know, Andrew needs information. Okay, I know it's in sportswear somewhere. I just got to ask the right question to find it, right? And then the reporting side is exactly what you just alluded to. It's, hey, we want to go back and look at, I mean, there's actually been some, you know, stories that people tell you. You know, we went back and we looked at the injury rate, you know, for this particular sport, and we found out this field has more injuries than the other fields. Well, that's the oldest field. You know, nobody's taking care of it. Hey, great, let's take care of the field. Or these groups have this type of protection equipment in it. We see a result.
Well, it's good to know that we're gathering data from such large athlete populations in multifaceted. So if I see patients in clinic, I can gather patient-reported outcome scores from them. But that's just a small subset. That may be pre-op or post-op. But if you're gathering that in just the non-operative or athletic training or physical training treatment arena, that can be super helpful to sort of aggregate and give us more information, like we were saying.
Now, I think there are 7 million athletes in sportswear, some ridiculously big number. We hooked up with the group out of Harvard to do a concussion study years back. You know, they were looking for concussion data.
Yeah.
Nondescript, right? So I think we handed over 30,000 concussions or something.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Big number. That's a lot. I mean, Andrew, if you look at the data you must have in your sportswear database, it's got to be huge.
I could pull up stuff from when you were there.
Yeah, it's a treasure trove.
So if you're looking to do a longitudinal study, then the neat part is you can do it. Look back. You don't have to say, okay, starting today, we're going to do a study, because sportswear, in essence, standardized your data collection. Why did it standardize? Because there's a field called body area, body part, right? Injury site, right? So you have all the fields that you've been filling out, and you know all the treatments that you did, so you can go back and look and say, yeah, for this particular pathology, comparing these two treatment protocols, A gets a better result than B. You just got to do the farming.
Yeah, especially with that large sample size.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Ginormous.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about it, too, is if you're someone that's working in the field and you're looking for, hey, how do I justify having another athletic trainer on staff? You could pull that data all the way back and say, look at what we've seen, injury-related evaluations, treatments over time, and they can use that in that sense, too, to help to get staffing.
Lots of athletic trainers do that just to justify their job. I mean, respectfully, you guys are so underpaid for the amount of time that you put in. And if you look at the amount of data that you're putting in sportswear, just right there, lots of athletic trainers justify what they do. We saw X number of injuries. We deal out X number of treatments. We signed up so many athletes. That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But it's all documented right there in sportswear. So if you need time for review, you want to document your efforts, you want to meet with your AD, it's right there. You just got to print out, this is what we did today or over the year.
In the innovation and the iterations of the product has been fantastic, from desktop, like I said, to online. Now using it on your phone, what's the next evolution of the product? Do you guys ever think you're going to get into force plate technology testing or work with groups like that to be able to build that into the system?
So that's a great question. Yeah. So it's kind of funny because I'm thinking, wow, is he looking in my book? So
you think a lot.
We do, because we mountain bike, right? And we ride motorcycles. So we do all the fun stuff.
You need a cam doing that. You can't break his wrist, though.
No motorcycles. Yes. Absolutely not.
Nah, we'll get you on dirt bikes. Where you live in Arizona, biking is
I take
awesome.
Care of all the dirt bikes.
You can ATV then. You can
also take care of all the ATVs.
Girls ride ATVs.
Tell that to everyone in Arizona.
I'm kidding. That's a joke. Okay, so... yeah, where's it going to go? So if you look back at what Cybex did, so first up, there are a couple of people at Cybex. So Rich started CSMI when I was in college. When I graduated college, he said, hey, you want to come work with me? So I joined Rich. Rich started in 82. I joined in 84. So I'm 21. So Cybex, the way they grew out Isokinetix is they started with the testing device, right? Then they said, well, if it works as a testing device and it works as a strengthening device, why don't we make an ergometer? So they came out with a bike that they call the Fitron. Yeah. So here's a funny story about
I remember the Fitron.
Okay, but here's where the UBE came from. So this is pretty coincidental. So Rich and I grew up in New Jersey, the Garden State, right? Yeah. In a farming community. A great place to grow up, by the way, Farmington. Anyway, so Dave Hillary, the CEO of Cybex, knows the gym teacher at the high school one town over, North Hunter, and Mr. McGivney, Coach McGivney. So he gave me a Fitron. So he comes back a month later to see the Fitron sitting on a table. And he's like, what's that bike doing on the table? He goes, well, the leg thing is really cool, but I got a lot of athletes that have leg injuries, so they can't use their legs. So can you build one for the arms? So he had the bike on the table so the kids could do the isokinetic exercise, holding the pedals with their hands. And that's where the upper body ergometer came from, was, oh, okay, so we'll make an upper body ergometer in addition to the lower body ergometer. So Cybex had, so now you've had an ergometer that does isokinetics. And the reason why you want an isokinetic ergometer is because, when you're dealing with injured athletes, you have an involved side and their involved side. You have a weak side and a strong side. But on an isotonic bike, which is a fitness bike, which is what's in your training room, you can only set the load to the weak leg, right? Because if you set it to the strong leg, the weak leg can't complete the cycle. Well, now the strong leg's just going along for the ride. If you have an isokinetic bike, right, you can't accelerate the bike once you reach the speed. Guess what? The weak leg can push as hard as it wants, and the strong leg can be four times as strong. It can still push as hard as it wants. So now both legs get a maximum effort training workout instead of one. So that's why you'd want an isokinetic bike or an isokinetic upper body ergometer. So that's what Cybex did. So now they had the Ice Connect upper body ergometer and the upper lower body bike. And that's where the Ice Connects came. And then they did an Ice Connect stepper called the Kinetron, which they actually built for the geriatric population because it was Ice Connect. You control the speed. So nobody would, this is pre-Stairmaster.
Yeah. Right?
So you could step nice and slowly. You can increase the speed. You could raise the chair and slowly push them off the chair. That's so they could take more weight. So it's a really clever device for lower body close kinetic training. But the problem is the athletes got on it. And it was hydraulic, and they'd go nuts on it, and then they'd blow all the hydraulic lines. So they had to come out with the Kinetron, too. So that was, again, an isolated product. So to get to your question about, you know, force plates, this and that with sportswear, I actually see it more connecting to the isokinetic machine, the HUMAC, because the HUMAC is probably the most expensive thing.
And what does HUMAC mean?
I'm sorry, Human Assessment Computer.
Okay.
Yeah, right. That was a software product. So that was, yeah. So the HUMAC norm was Cybex norm. When we bought it, we changed over to HUMAC norm. So I look at the isokinetic machine as the data collection testing device and training device. So force plates, we had actually done a balance system years ago.
We had actually beta tested a few, I believe.
Yeah. We basically, we bought a Nintendo Wii balance board. We clipped out their electronics because they use Bluetooth and they use battery, and which worked for them because in home use, it wasn't used that much. I mean, you'd use it for, you know, 20-minute spurts. But when I went in the clinic, I got used all day. So the batteries would go flat and we'd get phone calls. Hey, it's broken. So we cut out their electronics, used their strain gauges, but put a USB and powered it off the computer. So we actually sold probably 1,000 of those things.
Yeah.
So that was HUMAC balance. And they had, you know, people using it for concussion because it was center of pressure based feedback. And then when Nintendo dropped the Wii balance board, that was the end of our low cost balance board. So that product went away. Fast forward to today. Now, all of a sudden, what you see in the exercise physiology lab, right? The expensive force plates have somehow made it into the training room, right? And the clinic, motion capture, they're starting to make it into the sports performance. So now there's this whole new chapter. You know, there was physical therapy, and then you go back to the high school. Now there's this whole sports performance gap that's getting huge, that's getting filled up with equipment that you see in physical therapy and equipment that you used to only see in the human performance lab, right? Hence force plates. So yeah, so that's something we're taking a peek at. Yeah, the Ice Connect bike, we have one in our booth here. It's called HUMAC bike.
They'll try it out. He needs to get a workout into that.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, I'll come by and try it out for sure. If I walk into a clinic and I see an old pitch on like you had an old rusty one, you know, I know in the room that there's a cyclist in that department somewhere. It's like when you walk into a physiology lab and you see a golf simulator, right? You know there's a golfer in that lab. But it's the same thing with a Fitron. If you see a Fitron, you know there's a cyclist. Because if you think about it, when you're training for your triathlon, right? Your cycle rate, your cadence is probably somewhere between 90 and 100, right? And you're shifting your gears to stay there because that's where you're efficient, right? Mm-hmm. Well, imagine if you had a bike that you could just set it to 90 degrees per second and pedal as hard as you want.
Yeah.
And it doesn't go any faster. So you can do intervals at 90 without, when you're on your rollers, changing gears, trying to find resistance. It's the perfect training device for an athlete, for a cyclist.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's crossover as well. Just because you're cycling, you're training all your zones and it works for all endurance sports. So running, swimming.
And it's, if you think about time under tension for weight training, mm-hmm. right? So, okay. So when I lift weight, so like, comp train sends down a thing. Okay, Rob, you're going to do, I don't know, back squats today. You'll do 5 reps. You'll do 3 sets, right? And that's your strength workout for your legs today. And then there's other stuff, but that's the strength component. Well, if you measure the actual amount of time that I'm actually lifting weights doing that squat, so it's what? 3 seconds down, 3 seconds up, maybe 6 seconds,
yeah.
right? Total, right? Times 3 is at 18 seconds, right? Times 3.
Then it's 2 minute rest.
Yeah, in between the sets, right? So it's like a minute of under tension. Well, so when I go home, and I get on my Fitron and I set the clock to 15 minutes of under tension. Guess what's making me stronger? Riding the isokinetic bike for 15 minutes. And guess what doesn't hurt? Riding the isokinetic bike, right? And if you're doing your intervals, it works really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What innovation outside of this now? So you've done upper body ergometry, lower body with the bike.
Yeah.
What's the next, looking into the future of, like, looking into your brain, is a rower or an erg, like a regular erg in the future? Is that something that you can use?
So it is. Yeah, right. Okay. So, yeah. So maybe I've taken an erg and maybe I put a hydraulic system in it. Or maybe it's isokinetic. Or maybe not.
So,
the rowers, that erg rower, if you're going to look for a piece of fitness equipment, That would be the first piece I would buy, would be an ERG. It's just such a brilliant product. And they get it out the door for $995. You know, and wind, it's not as efficient as hydraulic, meaning hydraulic will hold the speed. Wind resistance, it'll accelerate a little bit. But as you increase the speed, I forget what it is, like by a factor of four, it gets harder. So that holds speed pretty well, you know, and you're starting and you're stopping. Hydraulics work better when it's a continuous flow. So you think more of a upper body ergometer.
There's some lag in the row.
Yeah, you're right. There's that start and stop. So it'd be the same thing if you were trying to row hydraulically. You'd have to catch the speed, then hold the speed. So, you know, how long am I at speed? And then somehow you got to bring the oar, I'll say, you know, back. So it wouldn't be too efficient on a rower. The hydraulics work very well on a bike. But for CSMI and CSMI's future, I really look at what, you know, Dave Hiller was the CEO, Ray Gianelli was engineering, and coincidentally, Ray Gianelli lives down the way from me. You know, so he pops in every now and then and gives me a little advice. But I look at what the folks at Cybex did, and I say, you know what? Isokinetics is still the most efficient way to measure a muscle. It's still the most efficient way to strengthen a muscle. Add eccentrics, right? You can overload. There's no better way. In regards to where it'll go, I think it'll stay best in the rehab community because it's not comfortable, right? And it's expensive. So I think it's ideal for athletic training. It's ideal for physical therapy. It's ideal for research. Does it work in the fitness? You know, if it's so great for strength, then why is it in fitness? You know, I was just over in Germany, and when you go to Germany, you know, you'll see a lot of motorized weight stack machines. So there's no weight. There's just a motor in there. But there's something fun about watching the weight go up and down, you know? So if you're in the gym and you want to watch weights go up and down, and it's also easy. I did 5 plates today and I only did 4 last week. I'm getting stronger. So do I think Isokinetics will make it into the fitness world? Should it? It should. Like ergometers should definitely make it into the fitness world. But as I tell people when they come down to my basement and train with me, it's not going to be comfortable, but I promise you when you're done, you're going to say, wow, I never had a workout like that before.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. So to follow up on that. So for CSMI, yeah, like, you know, the ergometers are cool. You know, isokinetically, that's what I see. And then the force plate, yeah. I mean, that's something we're taking a serious look at because we already had the balance board. You know, we just got to add the jump component. So I wouldn't be surprised if you walked into my booth and you go, wow, there's a force plate.
Yeah.
In the future.
What about in the future, if you have a young sports medicine professional in front of you, how would you advise them on using sports technology moving forward? Or is there anything you would change about how it's used now?
So I think Isokinetics got in trouble. It got a little oversold. So when people ask me about what can your equipment do as a measuring device, so we call it an evaluation device, not a diagnostic device, right? So back in the day, people might look at a curve and go, oh, that's plica syndrome or that's a torn ACL. No, it's not.
Right.
You know, you can't do that. So our tools are good for evaluation. I would say if someone's starting a clinic, what should I do for equipment? I'd say one, you know, plan out your cash flow really well, because if it doesn't work on paper, it's not going to work in reality. And then for buying equipment that's going to serve your market, you know, step slowly. That's the advice. You know, if you have the cash flow to buy an isokinetic machine, by all means, buy one. Why? Because I think it's the gold standard. I think there's no better way to measure a joint than an isokinetic machine by far. But if you can't afford the machine, you know, then you have to step it down a little bit and find out what you can. I think what you have to keep in mind, though, is if you're buying, I'll use the term a lesser technology, not in a derogatory sense, just that it's not as good as an isokinetic machine. You have to realize that you're using a lesser technology, so you're not getting as much information as you would if you use the premium technology. So what does that mean? So that means that, so say we had force plates, right? Someone bought our force plates and they said, well, do a squat. Oh, look, you know, you put most of your weight on your left side, so obviously you have a problem with your right side. Agree with that. But that's about as evaluative as you can get, right? Put them on the HUMAC norm. Well, I just test your knee. Well, now I know exactly, you know, what your strength is. I know exactly where in the range of motion that deficit is. And I can be more specific in my training so I can target your therapy in that specific area where the weakness is. So the example is, the more expensive device, Zone gives you more information that you can be more precise in your treatment. The less informative device doesn't give you as much information, so you're not as efficient as you would be if you had the more efficient measurement device. That's kind of the difference between the two.
Well, it's helpful. It's a, you know, it's another data point. It's a great data point and super helpful.
Yeah.
But you have to, you know, evaluate the athlete as a whole. But obviously, this is super advanced technology that's very helpful for us.
Yeah. And, you know, and when people call and ask, I always tell them, you know, be sure you're stopping and shopping in the store you can afford. That's just, you know, that's just the way it is. Because the most important thing is, you know, if you're starting a business, you got to run your business, right? And what's the lifeblood of business? Cash, right? So, you know, shop where you can shop. yeah. and grow your business out. If you do a good job, I mean, you guys know that, right? And you have a good following. How do you grow a business? Deliver a good product. So if you're a good clinician, you know, you start small. I mean, I've had lots of customers that start small. You know, they'll start with a refurbished machine, you know, and then they'll trade in the refurbished machine and buy a new one, or they'll keep using the refurbished one. Well, that's another way to get into it. I mean, I agree with you 100%. The one, what you're alluding to is, you know, Isokinetics, you know, they're expensive. So why am I coming out with an Isokinetic bike? Because now you can buy, you get Isokinetics for $4,000 instead of $60,000, right? So for training Isokinetically for $4,000, that's great. So my job is to bring the cost of Isokinetics down. Hence a $4,000 Humac bike. I have a $50,000 bike. What's my next US, you know, my goal in life? To fill that slot between 4,000 and 50 with a whole bunch of stuff that starts with Humac and ends with Isokinetic.
Right.
So that's the way I see it.
What are you excited most about in your future? Like, what are you guys?
I got a mountain bike ride that I'm going to do. I'm pretty excited about
that's
that.
That's what you should be excited about.
Professionally? You know, okay. So the
Things this are changing so fast, like the technology. That's why I asked. Is
they are and they aren't, because the human body's not changing, right? You have a human body, right? It's got the extremities that it has.
Yeah.
That's not changing, yeah. right? And basic science isn't changing. So, I mean, sensors are changing. You can come up with different sensors and things like that. But I don't know, what makes me get up in the morning is this is a great market. What I like about this market is it's really small, so there's no super large players that are going to say, hey, nice idea, Rob. I think I'll do that for you, right? So, you know, sportswear, one-third of the colleges use sportswear. That gets me up in the morning. I think that's super cool, because that means one-third of the college athletes are using sportswear. That's neat. The extremity system, you know, I mentioned earlier, in the Park City, the ski team, U.S. ski team just put one in. Daniel Bodkin, our physical therapist, athletic trainer, person in charge of our education program, he installed their system yesterday. That's cool. I go into a clinic in Little Rock, Arkansas. They're treating Parkinson patients and they're sitting on norms. That's cool.
That's great.
Yeah.
Continuing to evolutionize the business. It's great.
Yeah. You know, it's, you know, what's old is new. Isokinetics, it's just a good way to do it. In regards to the injury tracking, you know, where's that going to go? You know, the phone changed everything, right? Computer screens are just convenient. And I know I'm older, you know, but I like, if I'm going to analyze stuff, I like looking at computer screens. There's a reason why there are three screens.
It's got to be bigger as we get older, though.
Like, yeah, well, there's glasses. But that's why I have three screens on my desk, right? Because I've got, you know, Outlook's here, whatever's there, and something's on the third screen, right?
Sound bike track.
Yeah, right. All trails.
Right.
Planting roots.
Yeah.
The important stuff. No, I think it'll keep pushing down onto the phone, right? You know, probably voice automation is amazing, right? So people using sports right now, you know, you can actually comfortably put your notes in sportswear. That's pretty neat.
My brain's turning here. How's AI technology change sportswear in the future?
So AI is pretty scary because hospitals do not like AI at all.
How so?
Security document. Are you using our information? Are you delivering any information? Are you drawing any conclusions? Is AI involved in any of that? So I just filled out almost every sportswear customer now has us fill out a security document. Are you using our data? Is our data located in the US? Is it protected, right? So now there's a whole new chapter called AI, right? Is AI using our data? Are you delivering anything that uses AI? Because they're curious, well, how valid is the AI that you're injecting into our system? So we're injecting nothing into the system with AI. So I think AI would probably be more on your part, analyzing the data. So, for example, you may say, you may take all your data, dump it into a spreadsheet, send it into an AI program and say, analyze all these injuries and cross-reference it with where they occurred and tell me if there's a trend. So I think on your side, the AI will work, right?
That's the data outcome spit out for us.
Yeah, on your side. Us, we're just delivering a tool that collects the data. We're not managing the data. We're not summarizing the data. So I'm not sure today where we would go with AI. Now, tomorrow I may have a different answer, but as of right now, we're not touching it.
Conversation for another day.
Well, it's your data, right? So it's your...
Yeah, it's what you do with the data and how you use artificial intelligence to synthesize it and analyze it. You're collecting it.
Yeah.
And we're the next step, and it's being put on a mass level of synthesis and analysis to see what we can do with it.
Right. And all we're really delivering is a tool to collect the raw data.
A great tool to collect the raw data. So if you have high quality tools, then you have high quality data, and then you can produce high quality outcomes.
Yeah.
Right. So our job is to listen to people like Andrew and say, hey, Rob, it would be cool if I could collect this data, It would be cool if I could collect it in this way, right? That's what we would do, right? And that's how sports would develop.
And that's how the concussion protocol, I mean, the concussion part of your EMR came out, was that the athletic trainers were like, hey, we need something to help to do baseline testing, you know, from a scat to a sack to a bomb. It's like, we need that. And that's how you guys end up innovating that into your program.
Right.
You know, so it's just, it's making sure you're putting the right data in. But the athletic trainer has to put it in to make sure you can spit it out the other end.
Yeah, right? Exactly. That's our job. We supply the tool. You guys use the tool.
It's a team effort.
Oh, it's fun. Hey, this, the athletic training industry, it's just so much fun, right? I mean, Rich and I were athletes growing up. You know, I still consider them, everybody's an athlete. I mean, granted, she's dead, but, you know, everybody's an athlete. You know, you just want people to move, right? And the science supports it, right? I mean, you know, conveniently for me, every dementia study I read says, if you lift weights, you have a better outcome, right? Every bone density study I read, if you lift weights, you have a better outcome. So at the end of the day, if you want to have a healthy life, you know.
Keep moving.
Yeah, keep moving and lift weights. What's that? That's athletic. So that's why I think everybody's an athlete. Are there different levels? Absolutely. You know, and that's your job, right, Andrew? Your job is to figure out, well, at what level can I take this injured athlete and get them moving, right? How low do I have to move the bar down, right? And your job too, Cameron, is, you know, okay, what can I have this person do and get them to change their perspective and say, look, you're injured, but that just means you get to do, you're lucky, you get to do a different type of training. Like, well, what's a different type of training? It means for your condition, this is what you get to do. I herniated my back, I don't know, 10 years ago. I was on a gym floor for, I was in bed for 2 weeks and, you know, couldn't get out of my house for 4 weeks, right? Literally on the gym floor for 3 months, but that was cool. It's just a different type of training. So you guys have to come up with, here's your different type of training, and then you have to motivate them, you know, to train. Like, quick side story. So a long time ago, so he's a PT, he might be an athlete trainer too, Scott Hammersley, do you know that name? Okay, Methodist Sports Medicine, right? Dr. Shelbourne, right? So dial the clock back to, I don't know, 80 something, right? So I walk into that clinic, every patient gets the same story, right? So if it's your first day in that clinic, hey, Andrew, what's your favorite sport? Pick one. Yeah. So you like to play?
Baseball.
You like to play baseball? Great. Okay, well, you have an injury. Guess what? You can't play baseball, can you? Do you want to play baseball again? Yeah, I do. You really want to play baseball again? Yeah, I do. Okay, well, here's what you need to do. We're going to tell you what you need to do, and you're responsible for doing it. So at Methodist Sports, what they would do is they would evaluate you. They would teach you the exercises, but then they would sell you on, or you'd have to convince them, that you're going to do what they tell you to do when you're outside the clinic so you can come back to that sport. And every time you go back to that clinic, you hear that same question. Still want to play baseball? Absolutely. And they would just sell them. It was so
cool. You're opening up a can of worms, because that's the holy grail in terms of compliance and motivation and getting people back in terms of the short term versus the long term.
Well, yeah. I mean, the other thing, again, I had my day in the sun where I got to go back tomorrow. You know, like, what do you mean? You know, my knee's all blown up. Just drain it. You know, let me play.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not my life anymore. But, you know, there's a lot of people that are putting a lot of information out there. For the majority of, I assume even your patients are probably not high school athletes, right? I mean, if you look
I take care of a whole variety of...
But if you look at the numbers, right?
Sure.
There are more non-high school athletes out there than high school athletes, right? Right. So you just kind of, it's perspective, right? So you look at it and you say, you know, whether you're injured, right? Different type of injury, different type of training. But what's your perspective? Is your perspective, I need to be there tomorrow? What was your perspective? You know, in 6 months, I want to be sure that I'm really healthy. I mean, look at the ACL, the biology behind the ACL. When is it really, really healed? It's 2 years. I watch Supercross. Those kids, they'll tear their ACL today. They'll be back on the bike in 2 weeks with a brace. You know, that's just their world. But I think if you look at the general public, if you take a longer view of health, right, because you guys are in the health business, and people can settle down and you can sell them on the, you know, it's really what's important is 6 months from now, 20 years from now, that's what's important. So the little, what you may feel like are baby steps, those are very important baby steps to embrace, knock them out. And then 6 months, you know, 5 years, 10 years, you're healthy. It's not, oh yeah, if I only did this back then, you know, I wouldn't have to have that knee replacement or whatever.
Today's episode is sponsored by MetOne Technologies. Looking for innovation in orthopedics? Meet the only U.S.-based, Latin-owned manufacturer originally focused on spinal implants, now leading the way in upper and lower extremity solutions. They've just expanded their portfolio with the newly launched Fortis Distal Radius Plating System. 510K cleared and designed for next level performance. This isn't just progress, it's representation, precision, and results, all in one.
It's a great perspective. It's a great perspective. Yeah.
But again, I don't have a math.
Nobody has the magic wand, unfortunately.
No, there is none.
Yeah. But, you know, there's always next year, right? I mean, I look at, you know, if I miss an event, yeah, there's next year, you know, train better to be better next year. You know, I mean, the cool part is if you look at age, like, okay, so the other day I was at a clinic, I think I was in Germany, and I hopped on and they're like, how good are you? You know, how strong are you? And I was kind of having fun with the kids, right? Because the kid got on, he did something. I looked, I saw a score and I go, I think I could beat this guy. So I hopped on. So I kicked pretty hard. But the demo data on our HUMAC system is from 2009. So I cross-referenced my data 2025 to 2009, I was within 5% of that score.
Pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Having that data set.
It's cool to have the data set, but it's cool to keep the strength. So, you know, even at my, so I'm 60, right? So I collected that data when I was 40, right? But if you train and you exercise, you don't have to go nuts. You can keep your strength for a pretty long time, but you need to be healthy to train. So to be healthy when you get injured, take your time.
Yeah.
Don't rush it.
Yeah.
You know, get better.
Great advice, Rob.
Yeah. Well, Rob, appreciate you coming on today.
Ah, this is a blast. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. Follow us on social media, watch full episodes on YouTube, and check out our website. The information shared on this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. Please consult a licensed healthcare provider for guidance related to your specific situation. We'll see you next week.